Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 13, 2017. A former SPLA chief of staff says the morale of the South Sudan Army is very low.
The decision that Thomas has taken is a decision which many SPLA officers are going to take, and a lot of them have been actually communicating to us and talking to me that now they are demoralized.
And President Kiir's spokesman denies accusations by Lieutenant General Thomas Cirillo.
The allegation that came in his resignation, all of them are unfounded in the fact that he was the commander of those armies now calling militia. And he has been there for quite a number of years, that's from 1991 until some few weeks ago. He was the commander of those armies.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top general in the South Sudan Army who resigned over the weekend is accusing President Salva Kiir of turning the National Army into a tribal entity dominated by Mr. Kiir's ethnic group. Lieutenant General Thomas Cirillo Swaka tendered his resignation on Saturday from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Lieutenant General Thomas Cirillo accused President Kiir of turning the SPLA into a tribal army that works under the influence of the Jiang Council of Elders rather than serving the interests of the nation. In his six-page resignation letter, Cirillo says SPLA under President Kiir has, quote, lost the respect of the people of South Sudan and the international community, end quote. Cirillo also says the violence that erupted in December 2013, which resulted in a devastating war, was planned and orchestrated by design by the government. He calls it a tribally engineered war that has killed thousands of innocent people. General Cirillo goes on to say that the SPLA was supposed to be transformed and professionalized into a national army, non-partisan army per the SPLA white paper, but instead he says it has become a partisan army. Presidential spokesman Atteni Wek Atteni calls all of Cirillo's accusations baseless.
The allegation that came in his resignation, all of them are unfounded in the fact that he was the commander of those armies now calling militia. And he has been there for quite a number of years, that's from 1991 until some few weeks ago. He was the commander of those armies. This is uncalled for because he was part of the decision-making within the Sudan People Liberation Army, and therefore he also bears the consequence of what the SPLA as an army has actually done.
Lieutenant General Cirillo says he has lost the patience with the conduct of the president and commander-in-chief, the chief of general staff, and other senior officers in the headquarters of the SPLA. He accuses Mr. Kiir of all but ignoring the 2015 peace agreement and pursuing the agenda of the Jiang Council of Elders of ethnic cleansing and the forceful displacement of people from their ancestral lands. The Lieutenant General also claims that entire years have gone by without any official meetings among commanders of the SPLA Army, a situation he calls a collapse of a chain of command. He says the chief of staff mostly met in their own residences with the only trusted officers who are their tribesmen. Attorney denies the accusation.
No, if there is, you know, this is a, you know, not true, because if there is any advice he has been giving, he is not giving to the president directly. He was a deputy to the chief of general staff. And so whatever, anything that's come to the commander-in-chief within the command, it goes to chief of general staff, and it is the chief of general staff or in the command council that, you know, such reforms or such advices could be actually taken into consideration. Otherwise, he has not making them any public before.
Lieutenant General Cirillo's resignation comes amid continued violence and a massive displacement of civilians, mainly in the Greater Equatoria and Upper Nile regions. Aid agencies say fighting in recent weeks between government and rebel forces aligned with the former first vice president Riek Machar have prompted thousands of civilians to flee to Uganda. Lieutenant General Bapenyi Monjtwill, the former deputy chief of general staff for moral orientation, resigned last year in October, accusing President Kiir of hindering the implementation of the peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The former SPLA chief of staff says the South Sudan Army is facing serious challenges. Oya Deng Ajak says many senior military officers are frustrated and are no longer willing to fight in the ongoing conflict. Deng says President Kiir is paying tribal militia to fight in several parts of the country and predicts the army could face more defections because of what he calls low morale.
From the time I was appointed chief of staff, we could not work together with SALFA. SALFA was ambitious, and SALFA was suspicious of all the SPLA officers. And he started dismantling the national army that we have built over so many years. And he instituted the tribal militia group. He brought in the Matianga Nyor, the Gelweng, you know, and Dot Kobany. And Dot Kobany literally means rescue the president. So if you are recruiting your own tribal private army and you call them go and rescue the president, then rescue the president from who? The real SPLA that we were once proud of and the people of South Sudan were proud of was literally destroyed by President Salva Kiir. And the decision that Thomas has taken is a decision which many, many SPLA officers are going to take. And a lot of them has been actually communicating to us and talking to me that, you know, they are demoralized.
There is fighting going on in the country, and this fighting is among South Sudanese. Are some of your colleagues who are still in the army happy to continue fighting their brothers and sisters?
Literally, they are not happy. But the problem was there is no any senior or any SPLA officers who would want to pick a gun and fight. The frustration is very, very, you know, very high among the senior and the junior officers of SPLA. Thus, we have lost the direction, and SALFA have destroyed the country and have destroyed the army. The SPLA, thus the region and the African were fought up, have been killed by SALFA Kiir.
And when you talk about the army being taken over by some tribal elements, but my understanding is that most of the army is made up of professionals who have to submit their allegiance to the nation as opposed to someone.
In a normal democracy, in a normal way, yes. But in another way, the SPLA trained officers who were trained in Ethiopia, who were trained in Cuba, who were trained in Israel, who were trained in many, many countries in the region and in the continent, all of them, most of them have been sent off by Salva Kiir. And Salva Kiir, they brought in former militia group and people whose allegiance are to him, not to the nation. So the SPLA has been destroyed, finished. So you do not have SPLA left now. You have a skeleton of SPLA officers who are there, but the national army have completely been taken over and have been destroyed by Salva Kiir. And even the tribal militia group, which are now being called the national army, they're actually there. And it is very painful that in a young country like our country called South Sudan, every tribe now has melded down to organize and form its own army.
And what is going to be the outcome of a situation where every tribe is forming its own army?
Of course, the outcome is we are actually going down worse than even the Somalia. But our attempt, and this is what we have been trying to do for the last 3 years, 4 years now at the G10 and many other like-minded people in South Sudan, is we have to call and actually reorganize and call ourselves the SPLA, go down to the field and go back to call the national, you know, all the former SPLA officers. We have to reorganize ourselves and reorganize the new army, the new and the whole. And this tribal militia, there is no way you can do whatever with them. We will have to bring them on board. But again, transform them into a real national army, not a tribal militia group.
The South Sudan Army is made up of people who were former guerrillas, and so the issue of discipline has not been there, but you've been heading the army for quite a long time. Tell us a little more about discipline in the SPLA.
Look here, many countries in Africa here have the army which were former guerrillas commanders before. Let me talk of South Africa. Yes, they were former apartheid army, then they were ANC that have now formed the South African army. They are one of the best army in Africa. You have the Rwandese. These are former rebels who have taken over Rwanda. They have reorganized themselves, professionalized themselves, and Rwanda is one of the most successful and peaceful countries in Africa. You have the NRA in Uganda, which is under Museveni. They were guerrillas. You have Ethiopia. You have Eritrea. You have so many examples of revolutionaries or guerrillas movement that have captured power, captured their state. They have been transformed. The crisis we have in South Sudan is the problem of leadership. You know, I was appointed by John Grant as the SPLA commander, and the mission that John Grant gave me before he died was that we have to form a national army that presents all the people of South Sudan, a mirror that the people of South Sudan will look at, and all of them see themselves in there. Now, when John Grant died, that army failed to be built. Salva Kiir reinstated that army and decided to build, out of fear, decided to build a tribal militia group.
That's Oya Idenga Jack, former SPLA chief of staff and member of the SPLM former detainees. He was speaking to me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, this past hour. The UN Security Council has condemned the fighting in South Sudan and is urging the transitional government of national unity to ensure that the perpetrators are held accountable for human rights violations that include killing civilians and the looting of livestock and property. One influential South Sudanese political figure says his country needs more than carefully worded condemnations to end the violence still raging in parts of the country. Ayen Bior has the story for VOA from Washington.
Pagana Amum, co-founder of South Sudan Reborn and former Secretary General of the SPLM, who was in Washington, D.C. for meetings, says he welcomes UN condemnations of human rights violations, saying it shows the Security Council remains focused on South Sudan's ongoing conflict. But he says statements alone will not ease rising tensions or prevent further atrocities from happening in his native country.
The reality of the country now in the country requires more than just condemnation. I'm afraid the Security Council of the United Nations is losing credibility with the people of South Sudan, as it is only reiterating the same condemnation to the atrocities that are being committed by the regime in Juba.
On December 16th last year, the Security Council unanimously approved a resolution extending the UNMISS mandate for another year. The resolution raised the troop contribution ceiling to 17,000, which included room for an additional 4,000 peacekeepers to be sent to South Sudan as a regional protection force. It also called for UNMISS to use all necessary means to deter and prevent sexual violence and to monitor and record instances of hate speech. In the resolution, the Council expressed deep concern of the possibility of an outright ethnic war. Just 1 week later, a U.S.-led UN Security Council resolution to impose an arms embargo and targeted sanctions on South Sudan failed to receive the 9 required votes to pass. Again, Pagana Amum.
The Security Council has the obligation to protect the people of South Sudan from such a regime, and therefore it calls for an immediate intervention to protect the people of South Sudan and to stabilize South Sudan and prevent South Sudan from collapsing into chaos and disorder. In many occasions, the Security Council has unanimously decided on the situation in South Sudan. And therefore, it is time that they move beyond their repeated condemnations.
Amum worries the Security Council will lose credibility if their statements are not followed up with action.
Kiir cannot be allowed to defy the international community and the region indefinitely and play these games while continuing to spread violence and to throw South Sudan into massive destruction.
The peace agreement offers solutions to bring justice to victims of the conflict, including the establishment of a commission for truth, reconciliation, and healing, and a hybrid court for trying perpetrators of human rights abuses. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, thousands of displaced villagers from Wau are pleading for help. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what sports do you wish you could play?
There are sports I love watching, though I would love to learn or maybe I would love to play them. But there are these two sports that I play most, like netball, that's my favorite, then volleyball.
Basketball, yeah, I think it's a sport I wish I could play. I just don't have the height for basketball, but yes, I love basketball and I play a bit.
Badminton. I have my uncle who enjoys playing badminton, so we normally spend much time with him, and I like it. It's another sport which can help you work out your body.
American football. It's a nice contact sport. I like it because it's very physical and utilizes your entire body. So, yeah, it's a sport I'd like to do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Leaders from Wau State say more than 3,000 civilians, mostly women and children, have been displaced from their villages in Kwajin County by cattle keepers who attacked the area last week. Five youth were killed in the attack. The villagers say they are living without food, medicine or shelter and are asking state officials and aid agencies for help. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Simon O'Toole is a civil society activist working for the community-based organization, Kwarjina Development Program. He says many displaced villagers are seeking shelter at Kwarjina County facilities, including a police station, schools and church compounds.
You see, there is crowding. From morning to midnight, people are searching for water. Sometimes they fail to have food, they fail to have water for drinking. As well, there is no enough health facility. There is health facility, but there are no some medicine, some drugs.
O'Toole says people are holding under trees to get away from the hot sun. He says if humanitarian workers do not reach the IDPs within the next 24 hours, their health conditions will deteriorate. Monica Achaya is a mother of six who fled violence in Warbet village. Achaya says she and her children were unable to pick anything with them. Speaking in her native Luo language, Achaya says she's not been able to find food or shelter for her children for the past week. Achaya says they are sleeping on the ground without any mat because they could not pick anything when they started running. We don't have food. Sometimes I'm forced to go and beg other people in Kwarjina Market. Achaya says, we are many here, but some of us are getting sick and there is no medicine, she says. Achaya says she cannot understand why the attackers targeted her village. Kwarjina County Administrator Peter Ugwak believes pastoralists from neighboring Tonji State carried out the attack. He says the IDPs told him the attackers accused villagers of being rebel supporters. Ugwak flatly denies the accusation.
We have been trying to inform the state so that they may intervene by trying to follow up those who are looting the properties of the normal people. And those who have been killed, we have been trying to communicate with the state. Till now, I can tell you the truth. The state government is still yet not intervened.
Wau State Information Minister Bona Gaudencio says the state is sending representatives to meet with Tonj authorities to try to resolve the matter.
This thing is created for those who are enemies. They don't want instability for our people and our citizens, and we call them thieves actually, because among citizens, between two states, there is not any previous conflict among them. They are very good neighbors.
Last week, another group of pastoralists suspected from being from Tonj State crossed into Wau State Warbet Payam of Rolyodon County, saying they were looking for stolen cattle. Tonj State Governor Akech Tong says more than 350 head of cattle were looted by the group of armed youth believed to be loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar.
There is a rebel in those areas. There is a people of
out of control of the government, even in Wau. Even now, I'm being given information by security officers that there is a huge force found yesterday at night in Umbili area. Even the police ran out from there.
Governor Tong says he is sending representatives to meet with officials from neighboring Wau state in the coming days to determine the whereabouts of the stolen cattle. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Members of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party, opposition officials and civil society activists have strong views about President Salva Kiir's national dialogue expected to begin in few weeks. Nabil Biagio has more from Juba.
Achwil Malith Bangol, an advisor to syndicated organizations at the SPLM Secretariat, represented the government on the panel organized by Juba-based Dolku Communications. Bangol says holding a national dialogue won't be easy.
It's challenging because we need to transform human beings. We need to transform the citizens of South Sudan. The behavior is not easy. So transformation is very important, and we are focusing on that. We are not going to dictate the solutions. The solution has to come from individuals and organizations.
Chairman of the Democratic Change Party and minority leader in South Sudan's parliament, Onyoti Adigo, says it's not enough that people from different political parties and civil society groups discuss national issues.
What about those who are carrying weapons? Those who are now fighting? How do you attract them to come and join this dialogue? Because this term has made the time.
Adigo says everyone must be represented at the table if the talks are to be successful. Abraham Awalich, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Sud Institute, which is helping to coordinate the national dialogue, says the call for dialogue is the only hope the nation has to reconcile with itself and address the many grievances of its people.
Before the president declared the national dialogue, there was a clear sense of fear spreading across the country. Insecurity widespread. There was also a growing incidence of hate speeches across the country, and in the social media in particular. There was also growing pressure for international intervention in South Sudan and call for sanctions. So this was the state of South Sudan at the time.
Awalich says if the national dialogue is to achieve its goals, it should be about how to address the valid grievances of the people at the grassroots level and how to end the violence once and for all.
It should no longer be about President Kiir, Riek Machar, Lamar Paul and others, because the last 3.5 years have been about them. And the problem is that they cannot maintain an agreement. Let's start with the grassroots, and then we can bring them. Now we can bring them back. So it is like chasing a shadow. If we continue to chase these individuals and make them happy, while we leave South Sudanese yearning for basic needs.
Roundtable participant Mary Deng found the discussion to be very useful and says she now has a clear understanding of how the dialogue will be conducted.
This discussion is actually more productive than everything that we used to do, because when you involve everybody from the grassroots, from every community or from every age group, youth and elders and politicians and everybody, no one can bring coexistence in the country.
Juba resident Arik David also attended the discussion. David says he and other South Sudanese need assurances from politicians that they will implement the results of the dialogue.
Where we ran into problem as a country is not about dialogue, because we have been doing a lot of that. Where we ran into problem is the implementation of. So now, can the two politicians tell me some credible way, after dialoguing, how will you implement this?
President Kiir's stated goals when he announced the national dialogue in December included ending all forms of violence, re-establishing a stronger national unity, addressing ethnic diversity, and allocating resources more fairly among the people. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
South Sudanese journalists commemorated World Radio Day today by appealing to the government to allow freedom of speech. World Radio Day is held to remember the unique power of radio to touch lives and bring people together across the globe. Journalists say radio plays a big part in national development and can help reconcile South Sudanese communities torn apart by conflict if journalists are allowed to do their job. Mungome Davis Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Veteran journalist Alfred Taban called on the government to guarantee freedom of the press at today's World Day celebrations. Taban, who heads the Watchdog Association of Media Development in South Sudan, says the government must be more tolerant of opposing views.
To be a good journalist, you must balance stories. But does the government allow balancing of stories? And many of you will tell me that they are not allowing. Indeed, one radio station, I think it was iRadio, was closed down because the government did not like the voice of an opposition leader to be heard on the radio station. Now, how do you balance stories when you do not allow the voice of your opponents to be heard?
Juba-based iRadio was closed down by security operatives in November last year for allegedly playing a sound clip from former first vice president Dr. Riek Machar. Taban says journalists can play a big role in rebuilding the nation, but instead they have been subjected to detention and imprisonment for doing their job.
There are some journalists who are in jail. How can they hold this dialogue? How can they participate? So I'm calling for the release of all the journalists who are in detention, and top of whom is radio journalist George Livio. Please, I call on the authorities to release George Livio immediately so that he can also participate in the dialogue that is going on.
Speaking at the same event, Alair Dimayen, the undersecretary at the Ministry of Information and Broadcasting, acknowledged that journalists play an important role in rebuilding the nation, but did not say whether detained journalists would be released.
Now, the situation of the radio in South Sudan might not be developed the way it is in other countries, but to that extent of where they are, they manage clearly to give the message to the people of South Sudan around the independence, around the issues of health, education, peace building, development in the country, and so forth and so goes. People were able to hear the messages through the radios.
One journalist who did not want to be identified for fear of reprisal says most of his colleagues have decided to self-censor to avoid getting into trouble with the government.
We have an act that is called Access to Information. It was established in 2013. But then getting this information also is a problem. So the act is there, but it's very difficult to get information. This makes it very difficult for you to do investigative journalism itself. The other thing compared to it is like the threat that you can come out of it. Because we know the environment where we are right now is not conducive to do investigative journalism, because the right to information is there. But you as personal, it's like if you want to do it, then it's like you are taking the risk of putting your life in the story that you are doing.
The journalist says in 2015 he was detained for 3 hours for covering a certain event. Juba resident Nicola Julio Lino says he learns what is happening around his country and the world from radio reports.
We learn from radio also about how to stay with your neighbors also. Yeah, we learned also more about some of the things happening within some countries.
South Sudan ranked 140th out of 180 countries this past year in media freedom, according to media watchdog Reporters Without Borders. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
And that's all for today. Make sure you join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
We need to be strong. Harmony is what you're dying for.
K-Box, I know I'm a zoo, someone bitch.
Shkombe wala nar le hadi la miten haya bita insan we gazeta duban jinu Sudan bele jamil wa aziz la kisiyasa shilu nasfa wakate.